This hour of the Jason Brand Show is brought to you by the Dan Bongino Show. Heard weekday mornings, 9 to noon, right here on KTTH. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
There's an election coming up. Some of you already have your ballots. If you don't already have them in hand, you should in the next day or so. And in Seattle, we're looking to put in place, potentially, hopefully, a new city attorney. Now, a lot of folks didn't think that this was going to go anywhere because Pete Holmes is a big name and he didn't really have what was determined to be seen as a viable challenger. But as it turns out, the polling indicates at the bare minimum, there's some disinterest in a Pete Holmes term, another Pete Holmes term. You've got folks who have been polling saying that actually his poll numbers are kind of in the dumps.
It's a very low number for someone who's been in office for that long. It would seem to indicate that voters are not sure about his performance as city attorney.
So low that it shows him effectively in a three-way race with Ann Davison and Nicole Thomas Kennedy. Pete Holmes has 16% of the vote, while Davison and Thomas Kennedy have 14%. So that's a dead heat. Now, who you just heard there was Andrew Villanueva. He's with the Northwest Progressive Institute. They're the ones who did this poll. This is terrifying to me. Because you guys need to vote. Badly. Because to me, it should not be this close. Why? It has nothing to do with Pete Holmes. We'll get into that in a second. It has everything to do with Thomas Kennedy. Nicole Thomas Kennedy. She is an abolitionist. She is so far to the left, Pete Holmes would look like a Democrat. And I don't want to be put in a position where I have to vote again for Pete Holmes to keep out of office Nicole Thomas Kennedy. She is out of her mind far to the left. She calls herself an abolitionist, so I don't know why she would run for Seattle City Attorney unless she wanted to get rid of it. And what we know is she effectively wants to abolish any use of the criminal justice system to actually punish criminals. Now, she talks around these different issues the way that so many people on the left talk about these issues. When we talk about any kind of homelessness enforcement, we're told we shouldn't want to criminalize poverty, when that's, of course, not what we're actually talking about. What we're talking about is criminalizing criminal behavior. So when someone who is homeless goes ahead and breaks into a car or a home, steals things, yeah, they should be punished. Now, if they're doing it to get to sell something on the black market and then buy drugs because they have an underlying issue like an addiction, well, guess what? I want them to get help. But if they're not going to get help and they're going to continue to break the law, we should be punishing them. But Thomas Kennedy says, no, we can't do that. She talked to Cairo 7 TV. More prosecution isn't going to solve poverty.
The way that we can address those safety issues is by trying to lift people out of poverty, trying to make sure people have their basic needs met. There's no amount of prosecution that's going to solve poverty.
Okay, yeah, never. Well, thing is, it's not the job of the Seattle City Attorney's Office to solve poverty. But that's what she thinks it is about. She would be a disaster there. And so for her to be tied with Ann Davison is terrifying to me. Ann Davison, of course, is a Republican. She is sane. And she points out that we've allowed way too many repeat offenders to continue their criminality.
The experience we all have within the city of Seattle is a under prosecution of the crimes. There is a clear neglect in the city.
Guys, it is so important, so incredibly important, for you to vote for Ann Davison. We got to get her into the general. If you have people who live in Seattle, friends, family members, coworkers, it's now on you to speak up. We need to get her into the general, because otherwise you are going to be stuck with either Pete Holmes or someone way worse than Pete Holmes. And if you think that's not possible, I implore you, just go onto Nicole Thomas Kennedy's Twitter feed and look at her video. Listen to her campaign video. She is not going to prosecute crimes. If you think things are worse now, or if things are bad now, they're going to get worse. We need an actual alternative to Pete Holmes. We need someone who isn't further to the left than he is, because we know what are the big problems here. Now, of course, when we're talking about the Seattle City Attorney's Office, we're not talking about felonies. We're talking about misdemeanors. But misdemeanors are not getting prosecuted. And misdemeanors either lead to more misdemeanors or to felonies, the more serious stuff. People are breaking into homes, breaking into cars. They're not getting prosecuted. They're not getting prosecuted. They're being allowed to either plead down so that they're not doing any jail time, or they're not being charged at all. And as a result, we have more and more and more of the criminal behavior that continues and has created a culture of lawlessness in the city of Seattle, the same one that ends up creating a situation where we've got more people being murdered in Seattle than in years past. Last year was a 26-year homicide rate. Generally speaking, people don't just go and start killing people. They don't go immediately to the murder. They start small. They go into the misdemeanors, and they do a lot of them. And then they graduate to the felonies. And that's what we have going on right now. That's what we have going on right now. Ann Davison Sattler, is someone who can actually provide an alternative to the nonsense. This is a winnable seat. This is a winnable seat because the people of Seattle understand, even the ones who are very far to the left, they understand what is at stake here. And that's why Pete Holmes only has 16%. If people are unclear as to where they're going to vote, it's because they haven't heard of Ann Davison, nor have they heard of Nicole Thomas Kennedy, or at the very least, they don't know their policies. But they do know Pete Holmes' policies. The worst case scenario here are people sitting out this election and not voting for Seattle City Attorney. The worst case scenario is you get crazy Pete Holmes against crazier Nicole Thomas Kennedy, which ensures that things on the ground in Seattle will not change. They can only get worse. And if that's the situation you want to be in, okay, sit this one out. If not, you need to push back. You need to step up. I'm surrounded right now by a whole bunch of 16 to 21-year-olds. Some of them a little bit younger, some of them a little bit older. These are students who came to the Talking Points USA, or Turning Points USA, Student Action Summit. And they're here because they want to get more involved in their communities. Some of these kids can't vote. If they could, they would. Some of them are working on behalf of campaigns in their own communities. If these kids can get this motivated to push back and take back their communities, I'm hoping that you as an adult can do the exact same thing. I'm hoping that you as an adult can say, we understand what's on the line. And even though it is Deep Blue Seattle, the most progressive city in the state, one of the most progressive cities in the country, you feel like it's a lost cause. It is not. And these poll numbers show that this is winnable. But we got to get Ann Davison into the general first. And right now, she's not in a position that guarantees that. She is tied with a lunatic fringe member of the left. Do what you can. Make sure you're voting for Ann Davison. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. We're here in Tampa. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. We're here at the Student Action Summit in Tampa. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
In the world of things that don't make sense at all, we take you to the nation's leading association of pediatricians, because they just released their guidance on COVID-19 in schools and as it relates to schools reopening. Now, on the one hand, I suppose the good news in all of this is that they're saying, yes, we should be reopening our schools. It's time to get kids back into the classroom so they can be with their friends. They can get in-person instruction. But the way that they are recommending this move forward goes further than what the CDC recommends. And it indicates they either don't understand the science or care about the science, or we're being lied to about the vaccinations. Now, I have a tendency to believe that this is more political than anything else, and this has nothing at all to do with the science. They're ignoring it. because they are saying, according to the American Academy of Pediatrics, that every single student over the age of 2 should be wearing a mask even if they're vaccinated. Even if they're vaccinated. Now, this doesn't make sense on a number of levels. A number of levels. Because on the one hand, we know that the vaccine, according to the data, unless the data is wrong, unless we're being lied to about the data, is really good about making sure that COVID symptoms, if you were to catch it, if you're one of the rare cases, breakthrough cases, would be minor. We also know that the adults in the schools, the teachers who have been talking about how they won't return to work unless there's a vaccine available to all, well, presumably they're getting the vaccine, so they're protected. So what exactly is the risk between your 14-year-old kid or your 9-year-old kid going into a classroom, interacting with their friends, and having the limited social distance interaction with the adults there? What exactly is the threat? What is the issue? It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. But beyond that, we know very specifically COVID is not impacting kids the same way. That's what the data suggests. And we could literally look at the data and realize that there have only been a handful in this entire country, a handful of children who died or got seriously ill as a result of COVID. And when you go into the data, you find out that those kids already had something wrong, an underlying health condition that made them more susceptible. Now, if you have a child who has a underlying health condition, comorbidities that are incredibly serious, yes, of course, you should be doing what you can to protect your kid, even if vaccinated. However, we know that for the vast majority of kids, they are not impacted by COVID in a meaningful way. They don't get particularly sick, and they haven't been shown to be vectors of the disease. That's what the data says. Now, I suppose the data could be wrong, but why are we ignoring that data, but told to pay attention to all the other data? The data's. What exactly is the logic there? This is absurd. This is abuse. Kids should be back in the classroom. They don't need to wear a mask, particularly if they're vaccinated. Now, in the back of my mind, and Benny Johnson actually is going to be on the show a little bit later on at 5:30, and I want to talk to him about this. In the back of my mind, I can't help but wonder if we're not getting the honest data on the efficacy of the vaccine. And I say that not as someone who wants to get you to not take the vaccine, not get the vaccine. If you want it, and I think you should talk to your doctor and you should get it. Talk to the people in your life, the doctor who cares for you and knows you. Consult with them and then get the vaccine if the doctor believes it's the right move. Now, for the vast majority of people, it is the right move. It was the right move for me. However, when I keep hearing about these stories, we talked about in the last hour of Democrats who are all the Democrats from Texas who fled the state, all vaccinated, has an outbreak. That's a lot of breakthrough cases. Well, at the same time, we're being told from folks over at CNN or MSNBC and some public health experts that we shouldn't be talking about any of this. That makes me wonder if they are purposefully downplaying the efficacy of this vaccine, because they still believe more vaccines in arms will be better. And I generally agree with that, too. But if the efficacy rate goes from what it currently is in the 90% range to in the 40% range, well, guess what? Less people are going to take that vaccine, and it feels like they're trying to silence that particular conversation here. And this idea that we have to put a mask on a child, especially one who is vaccinated, let's say your 16-year-old kid who was vaccinated, that makes me wonder if we're not getting the full story of the efficacy here. And that will create more vaccine hesitancy. If you told me that the vaccine protection rate was at 40%, I would still get it, for me personally. If you told me it was 10%, probably not.
But obviously, we can all acknowledge that a 90% efficacy rate or 99% whatever it happens to be is much better than 40%, and it's more meaningful to getting people willing to get the vaccine. So what they're doing here is sending mixed messages, but more importantly, what they're doing here is putting out just bad information. I get wanting to be cautious, but we've been overly cautious with children for a year and a half, and it's hurt them. You have rates of suicide going up nationwide. You have rates of mental health emergencies, visits to the emergency room going up. You've got kids who are falling into a depression because they weren't allowed to see their friends in a classroom, having that kind of structure. And of course, there's also the academic aspect to it, kids falling behind. This is outrageous what the American Academy of Pediatricians are recommending here. And in a lot of ways, it's another reminder, because these are guidelines that most likely will be followed by public schools, not necessarily private schools. This is a reminder that the public school system is going to be failing your kids. Not just academically, we've known that for a while. Not just from the CRT angle, we've known that for a while. But they are failing your kids. And if your schools are going to implement this kind of onerous, over-the-top set of guidelines, you should be taking your kid to a school that doesn't. Your kid will be healthier and happier when they're able to go back to a life that they once remembered and enjoyed. This is ridiculous. And you do have to question what the motives are here. Sorry, that's what I believe. And again, I'm not the anti-vaxxer. I'm not the conspiracy theorist. I think most people who listen to this show will acknowledge that. But moves like this make no sense to me. Even when we're talking about adults, I'm told that 99% of the people who are hospitalized with COVID are unvaccinated. So then why would a vaccinated person, a kid especially, 16-year-old, 17-year-old, why would they have to wear a mask in the classroom if that's what the data actually bears out? This is absurd. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. Send me a text message. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. I'm here in Tampa for the Student Action Summit for Turning Point USA.
Yelm, Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rand Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local. Brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning at alpineclean.com. This is the time of the show where we completely ignore stories coming out of the city of Seattle. And instead, we focus all of our time, all of our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. We have an update to start the segment from a story we brought to you yesterday out of Tacoma, where a security guard had been killed. We don't know all the details yet of how this individual was killed, but we now have an identity, and we also now have an arrest. Tacoma police made the arrest yesterday afternoon or evening, and it's not coming as much of a relief as some people might think, obviously, to the family members of the victim, because let's be clear, this is someone who was taken from us too soon. And an arrest is not going to make the pain go away, but it does help a little bit.
That don't bring me no sense of peace, no. That arresting him ain't bringing her back.
That's Tina Mack. She's the sister of the victim. And she's identifying the victim's name as Denise Smith. And she told Como TV that she had an amazing personality.
That don't bring me no sense of peace, no. That arresting him ain't bringing her back. And she's only been at this site for 2 days. I just came here myself to see the building because I wanted to see for myself. I just need answers, that's all.
And you're not going to get answers anytime soon, unfortunately. We hope that that changes, but this just because an arrest was made, we might not know the motive for a while. In fact, Tacoma isn't even identifying or confirming, at least, the identity of Denise. All we know is that she was found by a coworker about 6 a.m. Sunday morning. At the time, she was barely alive, but she then later died. We don't know if she died necessarily at the scene or at a hospital. It's not been reported yet, not that I've seen. But we do know that she had what was being described as obvious signs of trauma. So it sounds like maybe a beating, maybe a stabbing. We just don't know. All of this, in a way, is avoidable and unavoidable, right? So unavoidable in the sense that crime happens, but avoidable in the sense that we have another city, and we talked about this yesterday, that has leaned into some of the anti-police rhetoric, a city that has done its best to defund police and attack police and change the laws. State representatives from Pierce County, more generally, are doing what they can to change laws around policing. And as a result of that, we have this kind of culture that continues. A culture that says you should feel emboldened by the support you're getting from the Democratic Party. We're not going to punish you. Violence begets violence. And it's no longer just violence that stays in Seattle. It's now all across the state. It's really all across the country. Meanwhile, a little bit of good news, I suppose, although we'll put this with a little bit of a caveat. The good news is that on August 9th, the border between Washington and Canada, the United States and Canada, will reopen. Reopen for recreation. If you just want to go over the border to get into Vancouver for a trip, if you're the lovers, the couples, where they have a shared commitment to each other but haven't actually been able to see each other because of the border closures. One lives in Canada, the other one lives in Washington. You get to go across the border. However, the bad part about this is you have to show proof of a full vaccine and you have to get a negative
test. We continue to maintain that all travelers are required to do a pre-departure test regardless of their vaccination status. This also helps to eliminate any asymptomatic infections in vaccinated individuals.
That's Canadian Minister of Health, Patty Hidu. She says they are seeing a few breakthrough cases in vaccinated Canadians and they want to keep that down. How many could there possibly be? Seriously, how many of these cases could there possibly be for them to justify not only showing proof of a vaccine, which they get to do the same way that you're forced to show proof of citizenship, you have to show your passport or an ID, but also a negative test? That is so bizarre to me. And there's going to be a lot of people who are making a lot of money off of this. Because let's be clear, we are now going into the world in which we are telling people that there's high chances that you could be asymptomatic and you better be careful about it. So here, buy a lot of these really, really expensive tests. Constantly test yourself. Make sure that you're not asymptomatic. I feel fine. Well, you could be asymptomatic. Yeah, but I feel fine. So you could still be asymptomatic and spread it and then kill grandma. Yeah, but grandma has a vaccine and the efficacy rate is rather high, I'm told. But what if she's a breakthrough case? We're being told this over and over and over again. And people are making a lot of money off of this. Bill Gates apparently included. Because he just purchased a company, we're told, according to the Western Journal, on tests. And they're pushing it. It's all about the asymptomatic testing. Make sure everyone's clean. Okay. Speaking of Redmond, well, I said Bill Gates from Microsoft, which is based in Redmond, and that's my connection in the Big Local. We now have under review the 911 operator who responded to the Richard Sherman family call when he was allegedly at the home, tried to break in, was apparently drunk at the time. Lots of people heard the 911 call, and they thought the respondent, the 911 operator, was incredibly rude.
My husband is drunk and belligerent.
What? Kill himself. Stop. Stop. What's the address? Are there any weapons? Stop.
Now, on the one hand, I think that there's nothing wrong with having to be a little bit assertive at a time where someone who's calling you is incredibly emotional. And of course they're going to be emotional. They are human. They're going through some kind of trauma or traumatic experience at the time. It's going to be emotional. And the role of a 911 operator is to get the pertinent information so that they can send the police over, or whomever they need to send over, so that they are there responding to what the actual threat is. And so they have to get a little bit bold, sometimes just a little bit rude, to find out if there are weapons, who's actually there, who are the suspects. All of that is incredibly important. And so initially when I heard the 911 call, at least a portion of it, and I remember playing it live on air, at the beginning I said, okay, this might sound a little bit rude to people, but this is part of the job. It's necessary. But it ended up being rude the entire time. And it didn't really stop.
There are no weapons.
You need to stop interrupting me so I can get the information I need to get officers expedited.
I need officers here now.
There was no compassion at all, and it just seemed like it was rude at the end of this. I get a little bit at the front. That part makes sense to me. It continued and continued and continued. And so I did a complete 180 on this one. I actually think she was, in fact, a little bit too rude. Now, Redmond police say they're going to get this review. They've ordered the review because of so many complaints coming in. And that can take several months. And by the time we get a result, you will have forgotten all of this. In fact, you'll probably forgot that Richard Sherman was a free agent and is playing in the NFL. And who Richard Sherman, I've already forgot who he is. Is he a cornerback, Peyton? Yeah, he's a cornerback. Peyton got in my ear. He told me quarterback, but I knew that that was a lie he was trying to use to embarrass me. Well, get this. I don't get embarrassed. That's my ego. It's a Jason Rancho.
Welcome back to the Jason Rants Show on KTTH. Joining me here at Media Row, Brandon Tatum, of course, founder of the Tatum Report, former police officer, a weekend host formerly of the same company out in Phoenix. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It was an incredible time. I love the KTAR was the one in Phoenix. I loved every minute of it.
So it feels like there's lots of topics that anyone can choose from in this world. Let's talk about policing. We are in Washington State, just a few days away from the implementation of 13 police accountability bills that will go into effect. And I want to get your perspective on one particular aspect in which the Democrats have completely reshaped when an officer can use force. And they can only use force, and by them, the definition of force is literally any sort of physical touching. Number one, if you're making an arrest due to probable cause in the moment. Number two, if they're escaping detention. Or number three, if there is an imminent threat. Do you already can see some of the real significant problems there?
Yeah, I mean, a person who's not at all involved in law enforcement shouldn't be making any laws unless they've worn a badge and done the job. I mean, it's easy to Monday morning quarterback what police officers do, you know, and what they're really trying to do is put them in a negative situation to where they can critique you and fire you over just about anything. They want you to be in a position where it's a lose-lose. Let me give you an example. When we were on a police department, we had a ordinance within our police department that you can't drive code 3 and operate your MTC computer. Well, that is impossible to do because when you're driving code 3, going to a call for service, there's updates that come on a computer that's telling you the man has a knife or whatever the case may be, the address.
Yep.
You have to manipulate your computer while driving. And of course, they got it in the rule book. Is so if you crash, they can say, "See, we told you you're not supposed to use a computer when you crash." And I think that's the same thing that they're doing to law enforcement now, saying, "Here's the parameters of use of force." It's impossible to meet the standard, and it's ambiguous to a certain degree. So if you do something that they don't like, they can say, "See, you were wrong. You're wrong."
In Washington State, starting next week, you can't use a chokehold, except you can use a chokehold if it's to save a life. That is conflicting.
Right. I mean,
who's determining that?
Yeah, who's determining it? You're talking about the person who's, you know, is getting choked? Or, you know, they don't want to decide. I mean, like I said, it's not reasonable for them to make these restrictions, because how many people have died from a chokehold in Seattle? are in the state of Washington, probably three in the history, you know. So they're pushing an agenda politically because of what happened to George Floyd, mm-hmm. which is an anomaly. You know, well, those things don't often happen.
This stuff happened before George Floyd, but obviously that incident really ignited the movement. Right. What do you think is the end goal?
Federalized police. I think that's the end goal. I think what they want to do is just completely unravel our local police, our police on a local level. They want to make police appear that they cannot handle crime and it is insufficient the way they are, because they know once they defund, it's going to get worse. Mm-hmm. And then when it gets worse, they're going to try to circle back and say, well, we need more funding. Well, they don't want to fund local police. They want to control the police from the federal level. So therefore, when they have mask mandates or they have vaccines or whatever, then they can, from the top down, they can say, okay, we're going to enforce this. Because right now, municipalities don't have to enforce these laws, and sheriff's deputies or the sheriff don't have to enforce certain federal laws, i.e. we see sanctuary cities and stuff like that. So that's what their goal is, in my personal opinion.
Well, Merrick Garland not too long ago announced a new round of consent decrees against different police departments. Seattle, of course, has been dealing with the federal consent decree for years. They were going to get rid of it, and then George Floyd happened, and then they pretended that what happened in Minneapolis happens all the time in Seattle. It really does seem that this whole idea of like dismantling systems of oppression and then rebuilding it in its image, that's their goal. But, you know, when it comes to policing, we have literal lives on the line.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing trial and error with their conspiracies of, you know, systemic racism in this country. It's the dumbest thing ever. It's the biggest lie, one of the biggest lies. Racism systemically in the country and racism systemically in the criminal justice system and policing is the biggest lie that they try to use to emotionally indoctrinate people so they can do their crappy policies with the crazy agenda on the back end of it. I mean, policing is probably the least racist institution. So is any environment of service that you sacrifice your life to serve other people, that's probably the least racist. You don't get a chance to go on a call and they say, it's a man with a knife, you know, or a man stabbing his wife. And you're going to say, wait, is that man black or mm-hmm. is he not black? Is he mixed? Is he white? Is mm-hmm. he Asian? You don't get to say that, man. You show up and you put your life on the line. And sometimes cops do die trying to save the lives of other people. And a lot of times it's minorities. So to me, it's the least racist profession that there is. Also, our country is not a racist country. They create this thing called the racist boogeyman. That's pretty much what it is, so they can divide us and control us.
It works, doesn't it?
It works
for a lot of people.
It works tremendously because a lot of people are sheep, and then a lot of people are emotional.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't differentiate truth from emotion. And it feel like you feel some emotional experience when you see George Floyd and Derek Chauvin with his knee on his neck. Okay, you feel an emotional experience.
You're supposed to. You're a human.
Right. You may feel when, you know, another person gets shot and you see it on TV and you may not understand it. You may feel a certain way. However, the facts are rooted in stats. And those stats say that this is very rare that you see a unarmed black man getting shot by the police. It's even rarer than a white person getting shot unarmed by police. So if people would operate in logic and in facts, I think we would have a more balanced outrage when it comes to policing in America.
So where does this end? What's the end of this story?
Well, it depends on who step up and who win the fight. You know, at the end of the liberal leftist agenda is federalized police and division amongst black and white people and division amongst vaccinated and unvaccinated people so they can control you. And I think the ultimate goal is to, and I know it sounds like a conspiracy theorist, but Elon Musk's girlfriend came on a video and said this. And Elon Musk is one of the most intelligent, forward-thinking people in the country. And, you know, his girlfriend said that they're going to create a situation where AI is going to take over everything. And the people are going to be the ones. So this is how it works. AI will take over everything. Like, you've already seen it. You know, McDonald's is having the automated stuff. And then, like just the other day, I went to in the airport. I'm going through, and they got an automated booth where you can buy the stuff, and you scan it right there. Eventually, computers are going to do all the work. You go to Amazon. You go to Google. I mean, you go to Amazon. You go to any of these big department stores, they got computers that go and pick things and put them in places. That computers are gonna run our country, and people are gonna get paid based on the dividend of the work of the computers. And so, therefore, you won't have to work. and you can live in a socialist environment or a communist environment where the government provides everything for you because the workload is coming from the computers, from the AI technology. And then you have the people at the top that are just getting filthy rich, the Jeff Bezos and all these other people that are just dominating. I think that's the end goal for the radical left. For the conservatives, the end goal is to get our country back to being a reasonable nation of laws and law and order and integrity and the fear of God and all of these great things that made us successful to this point. And whoever wins that fight is the way the country is going to go.
Well, hopefully we win that fight. I will take the Hyperloop technology, though. I'm not going to lie. I like that from Elon.
Yeah, I know.
I'll take that. If I could travel between cities within just a few minutes.
I know, right?
Have they figured out how to slow down the Hyperloop compartment?
It's called crashing.
Well, that's probably not a good way to get around town. Brandon Tatum, thank you so much for stopping by. Again, TatumReport.com. Go there now. Make sure you give him a follow at The Officer Tatum. Thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
God bless you. Thank you.
You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.